Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In the 2006-07 season, Arsenal ladies created history never to be surpassed in the women's game. They won the Women's Premier League, the FA Cup, the Women's Premier League Cup and the UEFA Cup, now recognised as the Champions League. Arsenal remain the only British club to have won the European Cup. The girls defeated Swedish side Umeå 1-0 in a tense two-legged final, Alex Scott scoring the only goal from range in the final minute of the first leg in Sweden. Arsenal's overall record for the season saw them play 44 games, win 42 and draw twice across all competitions. They even bagged the Women's Community Shield and the London County Women's FA Cup too. Having won the league in five of the previous six seasons prior to 2006-07, Arsenal went into the campaign as heavy favourites for another league title. They had also won the FA Cup in 1999, 2001, 2004 and 2006. With a team featuring the likes of Emma Byrne in goal, Jane Ludlow, the club's record goal scorer in midfield, Kelly Smith and Julie Fleeting up front, as well as up-and-coming talent like Alex Scott, Anita Asante, Karen Carney, Leanne Sanderson and Katie Chapman, Vic Akers' side had a perfect blend of youth, experience and quality throughout the squad. But, as the old Queen song would have it, it was no bed of roses. Captain and centre-half Faye White, by now halfway through her 10-year stint as England captain, tore her anterior cruciate ligament in the summer of 2006, ruling her out for most of the season. White is no stranger to pain. She played in the Euro 2009 final with a fractured cheekbone. She broke her nose four times as a player and ruptured the cruciate ligament in both of her knees. At this point, aged 28 and captain of her country and England's dominant club side, the 2006-07 season ought to have been Faye's crowning achievement, but it turned into a season of mixed emotions. Faye, thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Arsenal Women Askcast, which we're now doing once a month, talking about the 2006-2007 season, of course, when the team achieved something truly special with the quadruple and particularly winning the UEFA Cup. Looking at the squad that season, it just seemed to hit one of those rare moments you get in really good football teams when you've got this really good blend of players who are at their peak, experienced players, good young players coming through, which is a really delicate balance to strike. I'm sure you were expecting to win the league at the outset of the season and maybe one of the domestic cups, but did you sense before that season started that you could do something truly special?
Quite a few England internationals, about nine or so, if I believe it was around that time. And yeah, I think it was just, I mean, certainly in Europe, we've always been to the semi-finals, kind of that kind of level before. So in Europe, we obviously knew that we were able to compete with the best teams, but it was just that one step forward. But like you say, most of the seasons, arguably, you'd argue it was maybe us, maybe I think Everton or Chelsea at the time that were up there with possibly winning the league. You know, we had a couple of opposition, not quite as much as like nowadays where it's, there's, you know, more teams that have the ability to win the league. But yeah, I think we always knew that we could do well if we performed on in cup competitions as well. But that obviously Champions League game, or UEFA Cup as it was called then, those get to the final was pretty special.
And I'm glad you mentioned kind of all the captains of the great British teams as well, because I kind of think in retrospect, you know, you and Kelly played for England, you know, and had quite high profile, as well as, you know, Rachel Yankee as well, Katie Chapman, Alex Scott.
But I think some figures who kind of perhaps under-remembered from that squad, I think of like Jane Ludlow, who was a midfielder and who is still our record goal scorer, and Julie Fleeting up front as well. How influential particularly was Jane Ludlow in midfield?
Yeah, she's hugely, because, you know, she's such a quality player, was our real midfield dynamo, if you kind of likening it to today's team. Certainly for Arsenal, it would be like Jordan, that kind of ability to get up and down the pitch and cover so much ground. She, for a midfielder, scored an amazing amount of goals. She's a real character in the team, obviously captain kind of a lot of that season as well, because I was out injured for a lot of it with an ACL and stuff. So we also, yeah, like I said, Julie Featon, who captain of Scotland at the time and an unbelievable goal scorer. Put her in front of goals, and 10 out of 10 you'd expect her to score, you know. So she could score types of goals, played at the highest level. I remember when we signed her thinking, how's this going to work? She was kind of flying down for games and not around training as much, but to have someone like that in your squad and in your team, I know certainly I was like loving it, and she was a massive addition. There was always, and there was another captain, was Ciara Grant of Ireland, with Emma Byrne, number one for Ireland and for Arsenal, obviously in goal. So yeah, those were maybe the players that weren't quite as high profile, purely because their national teams weren't getting to the level that England were at that time. So, and we were only just starting to compete with the best teams in the world around then as well. So yeah, some of those players, it maybe didn't get the limelight as much, but certainly were integral to the team and the success for that season, and many more as well.
When I spoke to Kelly, you know, we kind of spoke about her feeling really good again. She'd had like a bit of a low period personally at the end of her time in the States. This is one of the few seasons where she didn't really get injured. And I wanted to ask you a similar question, actually, because you were 28, kind of close to your peak years. You'd been at Arsenal for about 10 years at that point. You'd been England captain for a few years. But as you said, you suffered with injuries during that season. Does that affect your memory of this season at all?
Yeah, I think so, a little bit. Because when you're playing every game, you know, you feel like you're contributing to the team more. But I think that season, I remember coming back towards the end of it and was out with an ACL for a lot of it, actually. So then, as a captain, you're pretty much, what can I do from, you know, from the sideline and help? But equally, you do feel quite detracted from the team and separate, because a lot of the time you're doing your own training and everything. But I was fortunate to still travel away, like away games. That's how much I still wanted to be around the team, and certainly the UEFA trip. I was just getting back into the squad around the semis and final, and was on the bench. I remember that's the final, actually, in the Champions League, the final away leg out in Sweden. And then obviously the home leg as well, back at home at Boreham Wood, when we managed to hold on to the 0-0 after getting the 1-0 away win. So, but yeah, I think it kind of tarnishes my memory of that a little bit, because it was such a big battle that I was getting back from, I suppose. But equally, when you've played for a club for as long as I had, for Arsenal, and won so many trophies, it's just obviously great to see it continue, and you just want to be part of that. And the fact that we were getting so close to getting the quadruple and getting to that final, it was just, we needed a big effort from everyone just to kind of beat. No one expected us to beat Umeå at that time. They had Marta and quite a few of the big players in the world then. So the Swedish league was one of the ones to look at, like our league is now. But it kind of has different feelings, because you would rather be playing and contributing to all the games, but equally, like I said, you, for an English team to win that, and no one else has since, is such a massive achievement, and one to be proud of, certainly for women's football in England at that time.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about Vic Akers as well. You and I had a little bit of a chat about Vic Akers last summer when he retired, and you kind of said that, well, one of the ways he brought the best out of you was essentially by being a bit, shall we say, economical with his praise. of you. Was he like that with all of the team, or did he kind of adapt to the different characters in the team? And would he perhaps be more effusive with one person, but he just thought that was the way with you, or was that his way with everybody?
Well, I think it was very much his character and his way. That's not to say he didn't praise people. Certainly in the main group, he wouldn't show it as much. You know, like individual praise, it's more about the team. But I think if you did speak with him one-on-one, or had that time when you were around the training ground when no one else was or whatever, he might tell you, you know, well done. But they were fleeting moments, I'm sure, for many others. But equally, you knew Vic did it in other ways, like going out of his way to try and get you boots, or trying to make things happen around the back room of the way the club run, to allow opportunities for other players, and like with Judy Fleeton, that, you know, just anyone else envisaging being able to get her to come down and fly, and the commitment of going and picking her up and arranging all that. And, you know, we were driving, I remember going picking her up one day because Vic couldn't, and, you know, we just had to be a group and a team of going about ways of just trying to make it work for each individual, because, like, a lot of that time we were all balancing different things. Like, some of the girls were studying, some were trying to work, some were having to fly down, some were having to get picked up at different places. So he went out of his way to make it as easy as possible for most of the players, in whatever way it was, that for their current situation, to be able to perform at their best. So often that you didn't always need that well done and that pat on the back for him, because you knew he was doing that by what he was doing, just to allow you to get out there and play for a lot of it. So there's not many things that Vic wouldn't do to allow the team and individuals to succeed. So, you know, far beyond of what the manager probably would do now. So, yeah, I think he was very set in his way in how he kind of spoke to players and what have you. But equally, when he joined in with training, sometimes the banter and the fun and that kind of side of him comes out, which then motivates you in different ways and kind of just makes us feel like a team and things like that. So, yeah, he had he was unique, certainly. But his success is undoubtable, you know, with what he achieved in the game.
And amazingly, Arsenal's domestic feats weren't really the story of the season. As you said, the UEFA Cup win against Umeå was the crowning achievement. And you referenced the fact that you were just coming back from injury and were only really fit enough for the bench for both games. But then, of course, there's the kind of bombshell that Kelly Smith is suspended for both legs as well. So without top scorer and club captain, those are two really, really big misses. I asked Kelly whether her absence perhaps helped to crystallise the game plan a bit for Arsenal, because it was completely not in Arsenal's nature at the time, or something they weren't used to play, you know, fairly organised defensively, to play like an underdog. Do you think the fact that we were missing both yourself and Kelly maybe helped tip the squad, tip the team and the manager into that mindset for the game?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's often with a team when, I mean, the media and people outside the group make, I think, more fuss about the captain and the goal scorer than what the team do themselves, because they know the worth of each player, kind of thing. And so I do think when, like, it can help galvanise the group that are left to say, look, you know, it's not just about one or two players, because we know it's not. So we've just got to go and prove it and show it to everyone. And if anything, that might have helped, certainly with Kelly as well, because she was playing for a lot of that season. And I think also it helps the fact that the opposition sometimes will go, well, their best player's not playing, this should be a lot easier, or whatever, or we're expected, you know. And sometimes that just the mind games can affect teams differently. Like you say, you often, well, like in men's football, in the FA Cup, you often see the one in the lower leagues having a blinder on a day because of the motivation. It's so different, and they galvanise and work so much harder to upset the opposition. And it was similar, really, because at that time, everyone, because Umeå had won it a number of times before and what have you, but just getting that away goal, and then bringing them to home to court. I remember watching it and seeing them hit the bar, hit the post, and stuff like that, and scrambles around the goal. And you do need a bit of fortune in winning any kind of tournament or cup competition. And I think certainly it was, like you said, about being underdogs. I think the team enjoyed that tag for a little while, you know, rather than always been having that expectation and burden of, you know, you should go out and win all these games, you know. Because that's the one thing I always look back, and I think everyone always said, oh, Arsenal, you know you're going to win the league. But each season, we always had, you know, I think it was Chelsea towards the end of my career, but even before that, Everton, and we're always up there challenging us. I know it sounds weird now because Everton obviously aren't as strong as they were, but they had good team players like Jill Scott and Farrer and Rachel Unit and people like that playing. They had quite a few internationals at that time, so there was always a battle. And I remember one year, I can't remember if it was this year, I think it was either the year before or a little bit later, that Everton should have won the league one year, and they didn't. They mucked it up, and we were, you know, just chasing them. So it kind of shows that it wasn't always just, you know, expected that we win every season, but I suppose the majority of people in women's football thought we would. But having that tag for a little while, and certainly in this competition, I think did galvanise those players. And, you know, the players like, you know, Kira and Emma and Julie, they were still wanting to show every, you know, because they didn't, like I said, always get the profile they deserved, because they were brilliant players, because they were probably the better players in their national teams that were still developing. So for them, this was like playing in a World Cup, you know, cause some of them didn't get that opportunity. So they certainly relished it, and it was certainly a special year.
And you won a lot of trophies before that, a lot of trophies after that. Do you think that European Cup win in 2007 was the pinnacle of your career?
Well, I think it's probably hard to say, because probably it is probably strange to hear someone say no, because like I said, for a lot of that season that I was injured. So yeah. I think sometimes you do think, oh, actually, I didn't contribute like I would have wanted to, obviously, which is the first and foremost of any player. They want to be on the pitch and playing every game and what have you. But equally, when you're kind of captain, you realise that you can't completely underestimate it, because there are some players that have been in and around our bench, and if you say it like that, they will feel like they've never contributed to winning a league title, because it's not. It's, you need the whole squad, and at times they come in and make a big impact and stuff like that. So, but I think it's a pinnacle for us as a club, and what it did for kind of getting women's football in England kind of out there in Europe as one of the best. And then, you know, each year trying to emulate that and getting close and what have you, but kind of shifts the focus onto the English league and the English players. And, you know, if Kelly, I'm going back to Kelly now, but if she was, if England were better in her decade, she'd have been one player of the world player of the year, I'm sure, a number of times. It's just about timing, isn't it, sometimes? Yeah. And, you know, she's up there. I think she, you know, was in the top three at one point. But if England were where they are now, she would have been, without question, player of the world, player of the, you know, year, and world player of the year a number of times. So, but yeah, I think it was certainly the pinnacle for that. But personally, maybe not so, just because of my situation in that season. Yeah. But I say that because I'm fortunate to have won quite a few trebles and things like that in before and after. But I kind of then look at my pinnacle of being in the England team and get to the Euros in 2009 in the, you know, the final. But that's just a personal thing for me. But having had overcome a lot of the injuries in the past, to even be playing still and getting there.
So yeah, I should point out for any listeners who are unfamiliar, to say like the pinnacle of your career is a massive call, because, you know, you captained England in tournaments and won more trophies than I can count, really. So that's, you know, that's a massive call. Faye, my last kind of question, I'm really aware, I feel a bit guilty about this interview, to be honest, because I'm aware that when an athlete retires, all anyone wants to talk about with them is the past. And that is kind of the point of this podcast. But for any of our listeners that don't know, you're still very much part of the furniture at Arsenal Women. Would you like to just describe your current role within the organisation, I guess?
Yeah, well, since retiring, I've kind of been working full-time initially with the club in a kind of the marketing kind of role and promotion, and just trying to get more bums on seats in the women's game. But I've recently, since having two children, I've dropped to part-time, and but it's still an area of which I feel is important, because, you know, we're seeing the professionalism of the game increase, and players getting paid more and things like that. But more sponsorships now coming into the game as well. But I think for a league to be sustainable and, you know, really one of the top is to get regularly get bigger crowds and stuff. So that's what I have been doing over the last 5 years, of looking for the future to maybe change route a little bit, getting back into more of the football side of it, hopefully, which is literally probably like to happen in the next couple of months or so. So a bit more on the watching players and kind of scouting route with Arsenal, hopefully. So back to now I've got a bit more time now. My children are starting to get a bit older. Maybe looking at that a little bit. So it's something that excites me a bit more. And, you know, just still glad to be involved in the game, really, when you've played for so long for a club and, you know, you love the game as much as I did when I was playing. Yeah, it's just good to still be part of it and you know, doing a lot of stuff with the FA as well in trying to get young girls through their game with their own programme as well. So trying to get them to go back into their schools and get more girls playing and stuff. So it's all about that, really, driving participation, getting inspiring young girls to still keep playing, but also to get more mums, dads and families and people watching women's football at league level as well as, I suppose, England, really. That's the ultimate thing and challenge, I think, for the next few years.
Excellent stuff. And you know, someone who's been going to Arsenal ladies / women for kind of over 20 years or so, it's great to see the likes of yourself and Claire Wheatley and you know, Kelly sometimes, you know, still very much involved with the club and still very much there on a match day. Faye, I've taken far too much time of your time already. Thank you so much for joining us and for your insights. And I'll see you again soon.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for your continued support.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Arsenal won the Women's Premier League Cup final in March by beating Leeds United 1-0 at Glanford Park, thanks to an injury time winner from Welsh midfielder and current Wales manager Jane Ludlow. Ludlow captained the side in the absence of Faye White on a bog of a pitch in driving rain in Scunthorpe. Arsenal dominated the game and were it not for especially poor conditions, probably would have decided the match sooner. Arsenal's record in the Premier League meant the title was a mere procession. But the same was not true of the Gunners UEFA Cup campaign, where Vic Akers' side were not regarded as the top dogs of Europe. Arsenal comfortably topped a group featuring Bromby of Denmark, Rusyanka of Russia and Femina of Hungary, winning all three of their games with 12 goals scored and 4 conceded in total. Breiðablik of Iceland were comfortably beaten in the quarterfinals 9-1 on aggregate. But it was the semi-final stage against Brøndby again where things started to get tricky for Arsenal. 2 Kelly Smith goals in Denmark were quickly pegged back by Brøndby equalisers, but the Gunners' chance for maiden European success were hit by a controversial incident involving star player Kelly Smith.
She's had a long, hard look at it. Here is Kelly Smith! Perfection! The Arsenal captain to break the deadlock with a stunning strike. And the holders of the Women's FA Cup are in front.
OK, welcome back to this Arsenal Women Askcast special, looking back on the historic 2006-07 quadruple winning season. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by one of the players, one of the main players really from that squad, Arsenal legend Kelly Smith. Kelly, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on. Kelly, I want to start just by touching briefly on the domestic element of this quadruple season, winning the domestic treble. Given that going into the kind of 2006-07 season, Arsenal had won the previous three league titles, two of the three previous FA Cups, is it fair to say going into the season that the squad expected to win the domestic double at the very least?
Yeah, I think you could be fair in saying that. We had a fantastic team in the build-up to that season. Obviously, we had experienced players of winning the league and the FA Cup the previous couple of seasons before that, so we knew what it took to win trophies, and the mentality that we had within the squad was all about winning and, you know, putting Arsenal on the map. We were so strong in every position. We had mostly international players, and it was fun to be an Arsenal player at that time because we were dominating everything. The training was fantastic. The level of players that we had within the squad were all pushing each other in training and trying to push each other for places. So it was just a wicked team to be in at the time.
And nevertheless, we won the domestic treble, won all 22 Premier League games, scoring 119 and conceding 10. Even taking away the UEFA Cup, which was the crowning kind of glory of that season, were the squad still surprised by what you achieved domestically?
Yeah, we took each competition as it comes, as you do in football, but the more games that we played, the more confident and success that we had. We just had a real good bunch of girls that were really together and singing from the same hymn sheet. And we had a fantastic manager at Vic Akers that really, really wanted to play for and go out there and represent Arsenal and try and win everything domestically. Obviously, at the time, we had somewhat the best players from Great Britain playing on the side. And it was our job to move Arsenal women's football forward during that era. There was some teams that probably weren't as well equipped as us, so some games were quite easy. We would go into them knowing that we'd probably win before we'd even stepped off the bus, because Arsenal at that time had a fear factor about them. Teams didn't want to play us against us because of the amount of quality we had throughout our squad. But yeah, it was a fantastic era, playing with Jane Dudlow, Faye White, Rachel Yankee, Karen Carney, Julie Fleeting, Kira Grant. These are just a few names that are rolling off the tip of my tongue. So to be involved at Arsenal at that time when they were at the peak and pinnacle of the women's game was just really intriguing and fascinating for everybody involved.
And kind of personally, that season you scored 30 goals in 34 games. And I think one of the things that really stands out, just again for you individually this season, is this is a season where you stayed fit, where you didn't really have injury problems. You've written quite candidly in your autobiography about, when you returned from the US and some of the personal struggles and spending some time at Sporting Chance. How did you feel in yourself during that 2006-07 campaign personally?
I did have many, many struggles, and I didn't really want to play football. Having come back from the US again, I was so down and depressed and not in a good state that I spoke to Vic Akers, and he said to for me just to come along and train with the team, and I was just so low, I was just like, I don't want to do it. But he eventually talked me around, and then I committed to signing, and I was really, my love of the game come back free-flowing when I was training with amongst the quality of players that I was playing with. And he was kind of the catalyst in bringing me back into the Arsenal fold. And that season, the quality of players that I had enabled me to score so many goals because, you had Karen Carney on the right playing fantastic crosses, you had Rachel Yankee on the left doing her thing with the dribbling and then crossing the ball in, and Julie Fleeting and Leanne Sarnason, such good quality players that you just loved playing with, because you knew at any point you'd get the ball in the right position to score a goal or to either set them up. So it was just a real buzz to be around those certain players in that era.
And looking at the UEFA Cup, which has obviously been posthumously recognised as the Champions League, the campaign for Arsenal, they won all three games in the group. You then scored in both legs of the quarter final against an Icelandic team whose name I really can't pronounce, and I'm not going
to
try.
Breiablik.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll have some Icelandic listeners who'll correct me on that. Then there's the semi-final against Brøndby, Kelly. And you had a very eventful career for a number of reasons. In that first leg, you of course score twice and then get sent off. Was that Brøndby game possibly the most eventful game of your career?
Why did you have to bring that up, Tim? I look back on it even to this day when it's brought up, and I scored two goals in the first leg. And we was in quite a comfortable position. And then obviously the second leg, it was a tough game for us. But yeah, I there's regrets that happened in that game for me personally, because it meant that I missed the return leg and then the two-legged final due to the sending off and my actions after that. For me personally, I was disappointed with myself. David Dean actually wrote a letter to the UEFA at the time and apologised on my behalf, because I acted up a little bit after I was sent off because I was so irate. But it didn't actually have any effect because I got a three-game ban at the Umeå final, two-legged affair. But for me, I felt like I did play a major part in the success of us helping us get to that final. I just never got the opportunity, obviously, to kit up in the changing room and lead, with the team out and play in that two-legged final.
And obviously you're sent off for two yellow cards, and you know instantly at that point you're going to get a one-match ban and miss the semi-final second leg. When did it become clear that the ban was going to be for three games and that you were going to miss the final as well?
It's probably about a week after the letter come through, and Vic Akers sat me down and just told me the bad news, and I was distraught. I was like, something so silly and so, I guess, immature of me to do at that time was, I was sent off. I stick my finger up to the crowd as they were booing me, and that was recorded by the fourth official. I kicked the chair. I'm laughing about it now, but it wasn't funny at the time. And that led to the fourth official writing that in the report, and then my punishment being extended by, like you said, an extra two games, and that was the final two-legged affair. So deep regrets on my part for me not being a part of, Arsenal and the history, the only British team to win it, and I didn't play in the final. But like I said before, I felt like I made a big contribution in the build-up and helping us get there. And even watching from the sidelines out in Sweden when Alex Scott scored that, 25-30 yard screamer outside the box, I was probably one of the only or few English people in the stands screaming at that time, and I was just so emotional because I knew what a vital away goal that would be for us bringing the home leg back to Boyle Wood.
And not going to dwell on this too much, but focusing on the reaction to the red card, I think it's fair to say in your career, Kelly, you were physically targeted quite a lot, and you've got the surgery scars to prove it. And those of us that watched you also kind of saw that, you could, I wouldn't say retaliate, but you could look after yourself as well. Was that a conscious decision at some point in your career, or because you were kind of fed up of the rough treatment, or was that kind of side of your game always there?
No, it wasn't always there. It was the fact that I kept, like you said, Tim, being targeted. And it wasn't just, the same player that would be fouling, it'd be two or three. So they were quite clever in their tactics. So if one got a yellow card, they would back off a little bit. And it was a lot of late challenges from behind all the time, and, dirty challenges that I felt I faced. But I don't know, I get that's part of the game. And at times, I did retaliate because I felt like I wasn't getting the proper protection from the referee back in that day, when the refereeing standard probably wasn't where it should have been. So the referee just let the play go on. So my anger just built up, and I just saw red on a number of occasions because I wasn't being protected. and I was scared that I was obviously going to get injured. So I kind of took the law into my own hands on a number of occasions, and that's why I reacted, because I was so angry at the tackles. The referee wasn't, you know, looking out for me, so to speak.
And kind of going into this final, I don't think it's controversial to say that Umeå at that time were probably a better team than Arsenal. I mean, you referenced your undisputed role in helping Arsenal get that far. You were the third top scorer in the competition that year, behind Marta and Hannah Lundberg of Umeå. They were a seriously good team, and Arsenal were underdogs going into that, and especially missing you through suspension. But do you ever look back and think, perhaps reluctantly, that your absence helped to crystallise Vic's game plan a bit? Because Arsenal played very defensively, played on the break, which was not really the way that Arsenal played. Do you think the fact that you weren't there made his mind up even more to go that way, or do you think that would have happened anyway?
That's a good question. I think, you know, the Umeå were a stacked team at that time, like you said, with Marta and Lundberg, two of the best high-level strikers in the game at that time. And it was always going to be a difficult task, because we were massive underdogs, and nobody expected us to go to Sweden and get any kind of results. So when we did, we knew that we always had a chance at Wormwood, because we actually had the opportunity to play the game at the Emirates. Sorry, was it Highbury or the Emirates at the time?
The Emirates, yeah.
Yeah, the Emirates. And we chose as a team not to play at the Emirates, because we were so confident with our home form at Boreham Wood, with it being quite an intimate stadium, and it would be, you know, a couple of thousand there, and quite an intimidating place for Umeå to come in, that we actually turned down a big stadium, even though the grass was probably a lot crisper. But we felt like we would have been open ourselves up for Umeå. So we wanted to keep it tight and intimate, and we knew the ground and the surroundings and the changing rooms. It was our home, it was our fortress. So it was always going to be a tough game for them to come there. And I guess on one side of the coin, me not playing did change the tactics slightly, in terms of, you know, banking up, making it difficult to beat. And we knew we still had firepower, you know, with Jane Ludlow being so good from corner kicks and set pieces. We knew we were always in with a shout, and we figured if we could defend well as a unit, as a team, and keep Umeå out, they'll get frustrated and they'll grow, you know, they'll get mad and frustrated within that game plan. So it was always on our minds to defend first, and then maybe we can nick a goal and frustrate them even more.
And that second leg, I think everyone that was at that second leg, and I still remember it very well, would describe the process of watching it as torture, really, at times. How did it feel for you watching on from the sidelines, I guess as a fan as much as anything?
Yeah, it was absolutely horrific. I mean, my heart was pounding out of my chest. I had a dry mouth, I had sweaty palms, I couldn't sit still in my seat. Just because of the way the game was going, Umeå were very good technically on the ball, and you know, they had so many opportunities to score, but it just seemed as though there was something in the air, something that you could taste and smell, that was something was happening with this Arsenal side, that potentially it was our year and we could lift this trophy that no one expected us to do. And even when there was a shot, I remember, that hit, I think it was the bar, then it hit the post, and then it come back and hit Emma Byrne on the head and went out for another corner. You just thought this was going to be our day, because the luck is certainly on our side. And if we could keep just condensed and tight, then, you know, it's going to frustrate them even more. And it really, really did. And you could just tell by the crowd's feelings, and something was brewing. And I just remember watching, and just as the final whistle went, I had tears in my eyes, because I was so proud of the team and the manager and all the coaching staff. And, you know, I jumped over the barriers and went on and hugged all the players, and just felt so emotional, because I couldn't be a part of it, but I was a nervous wreck the whole 90 plus minutes watching this game, and watching us finally, you know, lift this massive trophy that the club had deserved, like, in my opinion, especially throughout the tournament.
And you know, there's the big kind of emotional explosion when that happens, and you've won, you know, you've won this kind of historic trophy. But the quadruple wasn't done at that point, and a week later, Arsenal played in the FA Cup final against Charlton. And in this game, you are able to play score twice, and I think the footage kind of still out there of you scoring a free kick to equalise after Charlton have taken the lead, and even by your standards the celebration was emphatic, shall we say. Did kind of going into that game for you, did missing the Umeå game make that give you kind of that extra motivation?
Yeah, I think so, because missing out on such a massive game in the history of the football club is always going to hurt. So when you've got another final so close in succession, and meaning that you could potentially do something special, winning the fourth trophy that's up for grabs, yeah, it was a big highlight for me, and especially after going 1-0 down against Charlton. And there was a lot of talk that, you know, that we were big rivals, Arsenal and Charlton, in those days. The teams hated each other. So, you know, there was a lot of talk before the game how we thought we were going to win the game beforehand because of the success that we had European-wise, and we were too big for our boots, and Charlton were going to do us. So that was obviously in the back of our minds too. So, yeah, when I scored that free kick up and over the wall, it was just delightful to get on the score sheet and get us back in the game.
And to kind of wrap up with the final question, you know, you obviously had an incredible career. Was the 2006-07 season the pinnacle of your career, and now you've retired, does it ever, you know, occasionally in an average day cross your mind what you all achieved in that season?
Only when I do stuff like this, and we talk about it, and it's the 10-year anniversary, and you just look back and you... yeah, you reminisce, you see pictures, you see former teammates that you haven't seen in years at different events, and it comes up again, because it was such a momentous time for everybody involved. And you know, Chelsea are getting close. Obviously the format has changed now from the UEFA Cup to the Champions League, but yeah, we're still obviously the British side to do that, and I think every one of us of that squad is so proud to hold that record still. We don't really want another British team joining us, unless obviously it's Arsenal again. Hopefully they'll win the league or come second and get back into Champions League football. But yeah, I think all of us are really, really proud to say, you know, hold on to that winner's medal, be the only current British side to lift that trophy.
Yeah, I look forward to Arsenal doing it again next season. Kelly, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
The victory in the final against Umeå was undoubtedly the crowning achievement of the season. Umeå, featuring a strike force comprised of a young Marta and Hanna Lundberg, were hot favourites for the game. Arsenal would have been in underdogs even had their captain and top goalscorer been available to them. Playing such a disciplined and organised game against a superior opponent was alien territory for a team used to dominating teams and running up cricket scores domestically. Alex Scott's long-range effort in the dying moments of the first leg gave Arsenal a lead to defend at Boreham Wood, and they defended it with their lives, confirming a unique achievement. A week later, Kelly Smith scored twice in the FA Cup final as the Gunners defeated Charlton Athletic 4-1, confirming the quadruple, earned without a single defeat in any competition. Arsenal remained the only club from the UK to have won Europe's top prize. The following season, they were knocked out of the competition at the quarter-final stage by Lyon, who were on their way to announcing themselves as the new power in women's football. It's a triumph that could only have happened when it did, when the Arsenal squad was perfectly balanced and the current power structures in European football had not yet constructed their empires. They also had a little luck in the final against Umeå, but having lost White and Smith for the final, their luck was more than due. In 2006-07, Arsenal ladies made history that cannot be surpassed in women's football in the UK. Played 44, won 42, lost exactly none.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.